My name is Carla Tagan, and for the last maybe 5 months, I've been managing the bookstore here at Holden, which is really my first encounter with books other than my own education. So I'm not a librarian or a teacher or any real authority on books, but I have become familiar with them in the time that I've been here. And some promotional material crossed my desk about a month ago from the American Booksellers Association, of which the bookstore is a member, and they're promoting Banned Books Week, which means to bring the consciousness of Americans to the fact that books are banned, not to ban books. Okay, so I'm not going to necessarily talk about promoting the banning of books. We'll talk a little bit about maybe why that's happening, but this is to draw our attention to the fact that lots and lots of books are being banned around the country and around the world, and just look at the fact that it's happened and talk about maybe some of the trends that are causing this. The slogans are, "Who controls the past controls the future," and that comes from the George Orwell book, 1984, which has certainly been read a lot this year. And he picked that date out of, he wrote 1984, 1948, and he just put it in sometime in the future, not really knowing, not trying to be a prophecy on this particular year. The other one is a little harder to read. Oh, it's caution. Some people consider these books dangerous, and they're The Catcher in the Rye, Slaughterhouse-Five, Our Bodies, Ourselves, Of Mice and Men, are just a few. And then it talks about, it lists the sponsors of Banned Books Week, which are American Booksellers, American Library Association, National Association of College Bookstores, American Publisher Society, and Journalists. And that's coming up beginning tomorrow. Is today the 7th? Mm-hmm. Yeah, beginning tomorrow. So you might see some other promotional stuff if you leave the village this weekend, maybe. Hopefully you'll see something on TV or some of the local bookstores out across the lake and the rest of the world. So that's why I'm having this session now. And I thought I would begin by rereading the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That's the freedom of religion, speech, and the press, the rights of assembly and of petition. And it reads as follows, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances." And I'm very thankful for our country, and I'm very thankful for the Constitution, which allows us to talk about books, to talk about our ideas, and to discuss the differences. So I'm going to try and keep it focused as much as possible on this as being an American concern, because I think we're probably mostly Americans here. I read an article by Robert McAfee Brown of a talk he gave in Seattle. Jackie heard the speech at the Barman Conference, and he's a theologian, and looked at 1984, George Orwell and the Barman, and he gave some examples of some of the slogans from that book and the way in which they're presented today. Do any of you remember the slogans from that book? Like, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. The story in the book 1984 is of a fellow whose job is to censor, and he worked for a government agency, and that's what he did all day long, was to propagate the whole philosophy of the government. And to do it in a way that nobody could really understand it and that nobody would even think about it. And some of the examples that Robert McAfee Brown gave in terms of war and peace, war is peace, is one of the slogans from 1984. He looked at our nuclear weapons, which are called peacekeepers. That's kind of a contradiction. The other one is freedom is slavery. And he examined the national security directives, which came out of the White House, that requires all federal agency officials to sign an agreement that they will submit any book or anything that they write for publication from the time they're working for the government for the rest of their life to the government for approval. So that would really negate the checks and balances system, the freedom of speech that these people would have, and allow them to really tell their story outside of their government position. And then the next one is ignorance is strength. And the example that he gave in there was that the press was banned from Grenada, the invasion that the United States made on Grenada last November, I think it was, that was a very successful maneuver on the part of the government. It lasted for 4 days. But he wonders if it could happen for 4 days, could happen for 4 months, or could happen indefinitely. Is this a threat to our freedom to know and freedom to write about what we know? I think a lot of us have studied censorship as a part of the past and maybe as one of the things that our country was founded on fleeing from. But I wonder if it is still a thing of the past. I wonder if it's a thing that you only find in communist countries, or I wonder if it's something that you find in underdeveloped countries. I wonder if it's something that we find here in our country, which is relatively enlightened and certainly not communistic. Since 1982, the record of censorship activities has really, really spread. There have been numerous attempts to remove or ban a variety of books and library books, textbooks, and instructional materials, as well as courses from our public schools. They're sprouting up everywhere. Since January of 82, there have been 22 publicized burnings, book burnings, in 17 states. And conservative estimates say that maybe that's just one-tenth of what's really happening, that a lot of these are maybe happening in an unpublicized way. Some of the books that have been burned since 1982 are The Living Bible, Snow White, which I don't have a copy of, The Sun Also Rises by Hemingway, I Never Promised You a Rose Garden is a story of a little girl in a mental hospital, and The Hobbit, the inner earth, fantasy. Records that have also been burned are by such famous recording stars as John Denver, Lawrence Welk, The Beatles, and Elvis Presley. They give examples in here that it's not just something that we may think that is happening only of the conservative right, but it's also happening in otherwise very liberal circles that will burn or ban a book that they see as being racist or sexist or promoting an idea that they don't agree with. But I'm still struck with, why is it happening now? And I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about that after I give you some of the examples that I've come up with. A really common rallying cry for people who are interested in banning or burning books has been secular humanism. They've condemned that. They've looked at that as called it a religion, and judged it to have no moral values, no respect for the American free enterprise system or for America itself. And they accuse secular humanism as promoting values clarification, situational ethics, and classroom discussion of sex education and death education, as well as evolution and creation and some of those debates. So secular humanism is kind of dibbed as one of the evils that the book burners or banners are out to get. They're also interested in going back to the basics. And I think we've seen the evidence of this in education recently. But they're also going a step beyond back to the basics, and many are promoting the elimination of classroom discussion, as well as the elimination of literature and issues and ideas that are real important to development of a whole educational foundation for looking at critical issues. Interest in parental rights and parental control has been increased, and they've spent much of their energy working against the public school system. With the Hatch Amendment, which is an amendment that happened in 1978, Orrin Hatch is a Republican congressman from Utah, and his amendment said that parents would sign consent forms for their children to be participate in any kind of psychological experiment or educational experiment in the public schools. which is fine. But that has been taken a step further, which means that any kind of classroom discussion or question of a student is something that the parents should approve of first. So many classroom discussions, open discussions then, have been squelched as a result of the Hatch Amendment, or people carrying it to a very extreme interpretation. And the equal time issue is another rallying point where conservative and maybe creation-centered thinkers are wanting equal time in the classroom, feeling that the liberals have had control for the last 20 years and that they want to have their views promoted in the same kind of way. But they've taken their own look at their view of creation as being an act of faith, and therefore they're not subjecting the creation story to the same methods of scientific inquiry. They're calling it science, but they're saying it doesn't have to be investigated like science is, which I think it can be told, but not necessarily called science. We talked the other night, a group of staff people, about around the issues of faith and doubt. I think that's really present here in some of the concerns about provocative material. And Carlisle Holte also said the other night when he was talking about C.S. Lewis that some people would burn a book or would not want to hear the issues of an atheist being mentioned. But Holte said that in using C.S. Lewis as an example, that C.S. Lewis was enlightened as a Christian as well as even converted in Christianity by the atheistic pursuit of understanding the kind of rational way of thinking as opposed to taking something based on faith. And I think a lot of us have seen examples of good, very prominent Christian thinkers that have been very much enlightened and converted by friends that aren't, or influences that are not Christian, Jewish or Buddhist or atheist even. And another thing that Carlisle Holte wondered, he wondered that if we are so afraid or insecure about our ideas, then that's what we should look at and not at the opposing ideas. Some of the tools that have been used for selecting classroom material and thereby banning other classroom materials, there's a couple. I saw them on 60 Minutes many years ago, Norma and Mel Gabler, the educational research analysts in Texas, are providing research and raw materials to lead censorship crusade. They do have the support of the new right, and their work has been to some degree supported, but not exclusively supported by the new right. And their influence is seen in that in 1980 a survey of states regarding their textbook adoption said that there were half of the states were influenced by the Gabler's research, which says that they don't want children to be educated by concepts, they'd rather have them be educated by facts. They promote traditional sex roles and rewriting history to interpret the past, maybe denying even scientific theory. And they're very much opposed to discussion, particularly on such subjects as segregation, women's rights, trade unions, civil rights, and slavery. The Gabler newsletter has advised, as long as schools continue to teach abnormal attitudes and alien thoughts, we caution parents not to urge their children to pursue high grades and class discussion, because the harder the students work, the greater the chance of their brainwashing. So it makes you wonder who's doing the brainwashing. Another very active force is the Christian Broadcasting Network, which is the second largest of the cable networks, second only to Ted Turner's. And they've aired some documentaries one of which is Let Their Eyes Be Opened, is a study of public education. Have any of you seen that? I've not seen it. It's a documentary on the influence of humanism on education. Okay, with that bit of an introduction, I'd like to just tell you something about some of the books here on the table, why they've been banned, where they've been banned, and then get some of your reactions to them. There's no particular order to this. The Lord of the Flies by William Goulding. It's been banned in Texas, South Dakota, North Carolina, and Arizona for demoralizing. It demoralizes and implies that man is little more than an animal. So in that it's a demoralizing book, I would wonder if it doesn't make you look at what the whole notion of demoralizing would mean. Ibsen, his book The Dollhouse is a play, has been banned because it promotes feminist views. Thomas Hardy's Jude the Obscure was banned in England in 1896, so I'm looking at the historical end of things too. The Last Temptation of Christ, this is one of Elmer Witt's favorite books, was banned in California in 1965. Talks about, this is a story about Jesus and Mary Magdalene.
May I interrupt, just a question? When you say banned, you mean official state by the state government?
Well, if a school board is banning the book, that's pretty official.
Okay, school board.
So that means, and most of them are school board or local localities. It's generally not, it happened in the state of California, not by the state of California, but by an official jurisdiction.
Yeah, a private group or a church group would have a right to, because that does not conflict with the Constitution.
These are all public, though. These are all public schools.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. That private school would be another issue entirely. Elmer Gantry was banned back in the 30s in eastern states and also in Scotland and Ireland because of...
But it isn't anymore.
No. In the 30s it was banned. It may still be banned. I don't know that that's been rescinded. The Revised Standard Version of the Bible was banned in Ethiopia because it was contradictory to a revolution that was going on there in just a few years ago. This is one of the all-time greats. Lady Chatterley's Lover was banned in Ireland, Poland, Japan, India, Canada, Australia, and the U.S. Since it was written in 1928. My Name is Asher Lev was banned at the 1983 book fair for being anti-Soviet. There were a lot of other books banned at the Moscow International Book Fair. Most of them we don't have here, like Kissinger's papers as being anti-Soviet, Carter's memoirs as a president, and a lot of other books were banned there as well. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee was banned in Wisconsin in 1974 because it was controversial and slanted toward the Indians. Oliver Twist was banned in 1949 in New York by a group of Jewish parents who claimed that it violated their rights, the rights of their children to receive an education free of religious bias. The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison was banned in 1975, and I don't know why. It's a story of a black man. I haven't read it. 1984 has been banned as being pro-communist and having explicit sexual matter. And most recently it was banned in 1981 in Florida. Steinbeck's books, most of his books have been banned. Grapes of Wrath and Mice of Men, I brought in, I don't have the dates on those, but they're also very recent. This book was burned just 1981. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. This has quite a long history to it. This is a book about a child who has a Christian mother and a Jewish father or something, and she's an only child and she's coming into puberty. Talks very explicitly about her development. but I just want to read some of the charges against this book. It's been challenged in many libraries removed from the elementary schools in Gilbert, Arizona in 1980 and ordered that parental consent be required for students to check this out for the junior high library. It was also restricted in Zimmerman, Minnesota in 82 to students to have with written permission of their parents. It was challenged in Tuscaloosa, Alabama and Fond du Lac, Wisconsin school systems because a book is sexually offensive and amoral. Challenged at Xenia, Ohio schools in 83 because the book is built around two themes, sex and anti-Christian behavior. After a Minnesota Civil Liberties Union sued the Elk River Minnesota School Board in 83, the board revised its decision to restrict the title to students who had written permission from their parents. Studs Terkel's book, Working, which is a collection of interviews of people in all walks of life working, was banned in 1978 in Wisconsin because of its obscene language. Don Quixote was banned in Madrid, and I didn't understand the charge against it. But it was written in English, but I didn't understand it. Many of Faulkner's books have been banned in Ireland as well as in America. The Diary of Anne Frank was banned as recently as 1982 in Wise County, Virginia. And the reason that it was banned is because it has sexually offensive passages. In addition, in Alabama in 1983, it was rejected on a book list because it was, quote, a real downer. Catcher in the Rye, I don't have my card in here, but that's one of the classics of the banned books. The Adventures of Huck Finn has some racist comments about black people and has been banned as recently as 83 and 84. Shel Silverstein, Where the Sidewalk Ends, is one of our favorite children's books here in the library. It has been banned because of, again, in Xenia, Ohio, there are a lot of test cases, I think, and I don't know what the element is there, but they've been very active. And this was against parental authority, was one of the reasons that they banned it, as well as being anti-Christian. They thought that it also promoted drugs. Almost all of Luther's works have been banned, beginning in the 1520s. By the Pope and the Emperor, and on down, it has been banned other places. We have all of Luther's works here. Faust was banned. I don't have my card here. I can't tell you why. And the New American Heritage Dictionary was removed from school libraries in Alaska, Indiana, Missouri, and California from 76 to 82 for objectionable language. I borrowed Tosh, who's our cook's t-shirt, and was going to wear it, but it was too cold. It says, 1984, let's keep it fiction. I guess I'd just like some reactions from you folks as to maybe what you see some of the issues are here, maybe some ways in which we can be open to others with others' views and maybe discuss them and reconcile ourselves with them without going to such extreme measures.
Well, your topic here was banned books in Holden, uh-huh. But some of these are in your library.
These are all from the Holden Library.
So these are not all books that you are banning.
We're not banning any of them.
Okay.
We're talking about banned books, and we have banned books at Holden.
Okay.
We have banned books at Holden. I think I understood that.
Yeah, I didn't. I took it the other way around.
I have only one comment about you read from that report that came out by some gentleman, and he complained about censorship by the government and the executive order. Well, they couldn't write a book without review by the government. I don't think that means if they write a book outside of government service that it has to be reviewed. But if they write a book about the service in the government, that should be reviewed. But that has to be reviewed. But if they write it outside of, if they write it some fiction or something about something they did in a school or something, that doesn't have to be reviewed. If they write it about the service in the government, particularly if they were privy to classified information, and that's the way I would interpret the executive order. I haven't read it.
I have the words of the order. It says, this is the National Security Decision Directive 84. And it says it would require all federal agency officials with access to sensitive compartmented information sign an agreement to submit for pre-publication review for their entire lives any and all proposed writings. According to one source, the directive currently could affect at least 128,000 people nationwide.
Well, that's
yeah, so that's anything that they write.
I guess they have to submit an outline to make sure it doesn't include something about sensitive information. Now, I have mixed feelings about that. I spent 32 years in the military, and the military, the military makes contingency plans whether you like it or not. And they have contingency plans, I'm sure, for first strikes on Russia. They have probably contingency plans for use of tactical nuclear weapons in Europe or anywhere else. They have contingency plans for use of biological chemical warfare. If this type of information is released to the press through unauthorized channels by somebody that feels they get into government service, learns about these plans, and feels it's their duty to squeal, the higher duty, the press has a tendency to sensationalize everything, and yet it looks very bad. You know, why are we planning these terrible things? Well, if the military didn't, just like any other agency, if it didn't have contingency plans, they would be missing their duties, don't you think?
I don't know, what do you think?
Because, now say, one of these terrible things happened to us, and we're absolutely unprepared for it. Biological warfare by the Russians against us. And we haven't had any contingency plans, we are absolutely unprepared for us, and it's chaos, and millions of people die from it. The military would be held culpable for not doing anything about it in advance.
That would be after the Mount St. Helens erupted, and the people that died as a result of it, and the towns that were the lava flow, you know, if you went down the river and all these things that devastated as a result of it, the press started to scathe the governor, who happened to be Dixie Lee at the time, because she didn't have plans to take care of this, and she couldn't prevent it, but she was supposed to have had plans made so as to take care of the people and the towns that were more or less devastated because of the lava flows that went through the Luna River that overflowed and so on. And that would be an example of having to have plans in advance.
What I'm saying, you hope you never use these plans, but if you have the responsibility for these areas, you better think about it. And it's very, very sensitive in things, and it should not be released.
I agree with him on sensitive information, because once it's released to all the people in this country, it's immediately worldwide.
Sure, that's right. The man that was in the CIA and released the names of all those agents, that was criminal in my mind. That man should be in jail. That's criminal. Those people were greatly in danger.
Of course they were.
And some of them were actually disappeared and murdered once their names were released. And I think that's criminal. And
does
I
that
think that's
bring
so,
any,
pardon?
Does that bring any questions, though, about what that's, the CIA is doing? I mean, is that an important question for us to ask?
I think we need oversight committees by our congressmen. But I don't think they have any authority to release that classified information either, unauthorized, unless they're authorized. Now, but I think we have to have intelligence. If this country didn't have an intelligence agency, the people in government who are responsible for the protection of this country, which is one of the number one items in the Constitution, you know, the federal government is responsible for military and defense and offense of this country, defense particularly.
What happens when the government is committing crimes?
That's very difficult if it involves very classified information, and that's a very difficult area. And I say, I have mixed feelings, and I don't have any direct answers for that. If you can predict that, if you can uncover the committing crimes, then you have to, your definition of a crime may be different than mine, too.